I'm Ron Sylvia with Purpose Driven Church Planting, and we're in the studio today with Hal Mayer and Cole Phillips to talk about launching large. And I think this is a major paradigm shift for church planters out there to actually launch a church with over 100 people and and how to do that. And I think about the whole launching concept and versus church planting. And I try to stay away even from talking about church planting that much, because you think about planting, you're burying something underground and it grows slowly. And for me, I went out to the Kennedy Space Center back when I was a kid. I remember my aunt and uncle lived over there. I went to visit them, and I'll never forget as a kid walking into my aunt's house, and she was taking everything off the wall and putting it in boxes. And I said, "Aunt Miriam, what are you doing? Are you guys moving?" And she said, "No, we're getting ready for a launch." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, we live right across the river from the launch, and the Apollo rockets were going up at that time." And I just dated myself. And so I'm sitting there watching her pack up her house. And she said, "What happens is the Apollo rockets go up, and when they go up, it shakes the entire community. And if we left things on our wall, they'd fall and break." And I thought about that's exactly what happens, and that's what we want to teach church planters how to do, and that's how to launch large, because we want you to capture the attention of the entire community. We want the entire community to know that there's a new church that's taking off in town, that they need to be a part of it. And as opposed to a planting, I mean, most people have either seen a launch at the Kennedy Space Center, watched it on TV, or been there in person. And but I venture to say that not many people get invited to a planting, you know, guys. Ever been invited to a corn planting or something like that? Not a lot of people show up, you know. Well, same way with a church plant.
That's good.
We want to teach you how to launch large. And so there's this differential. It's a mindset shift. And when it comes to launching large, I know that both Hal and Cole have done that. At Church of the Bay and a Connection Church, but there's some expense to this run, isn't there, Hal?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, when you're making that decision, you've got to calculate the cost, and it's a big financial expense. Mm-hmm. It's also an expense emotionally, family-wise. There's an expense. There's the stress expense, and you need to be ready for that. Because when you launch large, our goal was to create a buzz in the community. I mean, I love your illustration about the Apollo ship taking off, that it shook everything. That's what we wanted to have happen. Love us or hate us, they're going to know we're there. And that was the whole idea. So as we were launching large, preparing for that, it was all about a strategy with previews and marketing to bring that about.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the price of stress, you mentioned that, you know, and Cole, I just want to tap into you on this one. When you began, was this pretty mellow start for you guys, or was there any stress involved?
Oh, it took everything we had, and it is an investment up front of everything you've got, and you just need to know, again, that this is somewhat of a season, that you're putting everything into it up front, so that long term, you're going to be you're going to be much stronger after that initial investment.
Okay, so some of the price tag is stress, the price tag is a higher cost, Yeah, there's another price tag in this deal, guys, and that's criticism.
Yep.
You know, when you launch large, when this in an area of established churches that there, you know, 50, 7,500, 200 people, and you come into this community and you launch something that's brand new, and you're running hundreds and you blow beyond them in attendance, you're not well thought of, are you?
Yeah, immediately they think you must be watering it down.
Right.
If a lot of people are coming, that you're not preaching the word.
Yeah, I chased down everybody in the community, tried to talk to them about what the community was like, other pastors, and I was pretty much everybody's buddy until we launched. And the newspaper showed what we had and the 580 launch, and then suddenly everybody looked at me different, like I was cheating or something, and you know, that's the price of it. You know what? You get ready for it, but that's a shocker, because I see other churches as my teammates. Mm-hmm. But I can understand if you're struggling and you see a church suddenly take off. Well, it's either decide you've got to change, or maybe they're doing something that's not right or unfair, And so a piece of that comes in, I guess.
But, and I think it's this really is a paradigm shift, because most churches grow slowly, if they grow at all, you know, in that process. And it's a slow, steady growth, whereas what we're talking about is explosive growth. And we're talking about, in the purpose-driven paradigm, we're talking about crowd to core here. We're talking about, you know, you grow a church from the outside in, not the inside out. You grow, you launch with a crowd, and, you know, and back to that, you know, I think I've heard Rick say it so many times, it's easier to turn a crowd into a church than it is to turn a church into a crowd.
But, you know, that's how the early church started in Acts. I mean, we had a big crowd, but I didn't get 5,000. We didn't get 3,000. We didn't get those kind of numbers, but they started with a crowd, and out of that they built the core. The home teams didn't start house to house till they'd met in the big team, the big group. So that's a biblical model, I think, to do that.
Yeah, I think Pentecost is a great picture of launching large.
That's right. Pretty good work done there.
Yeah. Well, and so that's what we're talking about. And some things that we'd like to challenge you in, you know, when think about the timeline on this. Let's go through the whole W.
Okay.
Because we talk about, we want you to work the W. And the W, if you're following along on a CD right now, just grab a piece of paper, because we're going to kind of walk through it with you, and let you know, because Hal's already mentioned preview services, and the whole concept here is we want you to do 3 preview services and then launch. And a preview goes once a month, and then you turn around and launch large, and you're building momentum. You're inviting people to a preview to see what's going on in the church, you know, what type of church is coming into the community. And we'll talk about the whole marketing piece of that in just a minute. But if you'll take a W and just write out a W on a piece of paper, in the top left-hand corner, just mark preview one. The preview service itself, what's that all about? Cole, I mean, when you think about the preview and what you guys did and how you worked it.
Well, what we did was to first, we set our launch date, and you've got to pick the right launch date. Maybe we can talk about that in a minute. And then you work backwards from there to find your preview services. So you want to do a monthly preview service, and we did that during the summer before we launched in the fall. So we picked a specific date, and then we did... Basically, at that point, you're doing standalone messages that really hit some felt needs of the community. And you've got to get the word out. You've got to get people there for that. And so we did that, and that service was not a practice service, but right. It was the real deal. And we gave it everything we had, because you only get one chance to make a first impression. And so we actually had about 145 people come to our first preview service, which was so many more than what I had expected, and it blew me away that we had that many. I thought, man, this is going to be so much bigger. God's got something much bigger in mind than even I had at that point. But all those people came, and we made sure we got names of everybody that was there so that we could invite them to come again and invite them to come to what would be the next comeback event in that.
And the preview service, you said something in there. It's really, you got to prepare for your first preview service like you would for the future launch service. This isn't just, hey, do the best you can.
Right.
This has to be, you do it with excellence. You give it, you pull out all the stops in a preview service. It's a test drive, but it's not a, you know, well, we're not quite a church yet.
Yeah,
mindset.
And if you're successful with it, what you're going to find is people are going to not understand, why are you doing this just once a month? And people are going to say, well,
yeah, the push. Yep.
Well, let's do it next week. And you've got to hold on to that plan and say, no, we're going to do it again in a month, and you please come back and be a part of that. But stick with your plan on this.
Yeah, for us, our first preview run, we did several layers of marketing. A lot of people say marketing doesn't work anymore. Well, it's about layers and multiple touches. I mean, we did mailers, we did T-shirts, we sponsored ball teams. I was on the radio. I had to go on the radio because I got a face made for radio, not for TV. just several different layers. So when our first preview service came here, one of the advantages we had, and a disadvantage, we did what I call a dry start. Dry meaning we didn't have any local people there that were in the launch team. We kind of parachuted into this land and decided we'd start there. So then we didn't have anybody to help staff. And in the Springs, we enlisted them, and they sent down people to help staff us during our previews. And slowly, each preview, there were fewer people staffing, but it allowed us to have a crowd there and have it totally staffed. And my encouragement is find a church you can partner with like that. You don't want their people. They'll just help you launch. It will make a huge difference, because during our previews that we had, our whole goal was to raise up 75 to 100 people for a launch team, and we were able to do that.
And your preview service number one, how many people showed up?
277.
Okay.
And we, you know, we were shocked. We were excited. We didn't know what would happen. It was summer, and you're praying, and we're in Florida. And, you know, the hurricane had just come close to us the week before, and we're thinking, oh, man, what's going to happen? Actually, 2 days before that. So we were dealing with that. But it was so cool, because as people started coming, we were staffed and ready for that. So we looked like a mature church. And it was do it right and do it straight up, and we wanted everything working. In fact, for us, our first preview service went better than any of the others. The second one was tough. And I think it's because you get everything working, you think, oh, we can do this. And the second one, it's like everything falls apart. Maybe that's just my leadership style. But
I think that's your perspective, too, because I was at the second one, and I thought it was killer. I'm sorry I missed the first one, if that's the case. but the preview, when we're talking about a preview service, how do you guys get people there? You don't have a church. You know, you have a launch team. We'll talk about that and how to assemble one of those. But you have a collection of people that are helping you just basically put on a service and run a children's ministry. What's the marketing piece? What do you use today to capture the attention of a community?
This marketing piece is so vital, and yet it's so many different components. It's very multi-layered. You want to use every available avenue you can to get the word out and get that buzz, like Hal was talking about, get that buzz going. And we did that. We sponsored a little league team, and so the kids are wearing the name of the church before the church ever existed. And then also what we found that was huge was do some servant evangelism projects
right.
in the community. And those servant evangelism projects are not clever marketing pieces. But what you're doing is you're really positioning your church as different, as a church that is concerned about the community, and we're wanting to give back to the community. And so we did some servant evangelism along the way. And every little every point of connection makes a difference, and people start seeing it coming from cards in their mailbox. They see it. If you're in a smaller town, you can use newspapers as well. Mm-hmm. And so they see it coming at them in different directions. That's real effective.
One of our home team leaders right now, you talk about the multiple layers, which is the key. One of the guys who's now leading a home team and is doing well at the Bay got a mailer, was at the mall and had his window washed and a card stuck on it, and walked out of a store later that day and was handed a bottle of water from the Bay. And he said, that was God talking to me. I had to come here. And I thought,
wow.
Yeah, I agree. So be here.
Well, talk about, because that might be a new term for some people. For us, it's not. But servant evangelism, what does that look like in the Bay? You just mentioned several opportunities.
Servant evangelism we now do at the beginning of every series. What we were doing, though, in the summer was we'd get together, whether it'd be some people in the morning or in the afternoon, maybe at a light where it backed up, the cars backed up, but we would hand out a breakfast bar in the morning with a card. No words, just here, have a good day. And we'd hand those out to people, and then maybe water. We also hand out the SPF towels with the sunscreen stuff at the soccer fields. They eat that stuff up. We went to go to the soccer fields. All these kids are out there. Moms forgot the sunscreen for their kids. You hand out a card with that, and they start hitting your website. And it just, they're asking the question, and this is what you want. What kind of church is that? Man, did you see? Some church gave me this. How weird is that? And that's what it is. They're talking. But I just watched the website traffic then, and it would zoom. So I knew what we were doing was driving people there, because we weren't anybody. We only had a website and some people hanging out.
Yeah, and this is a great opportunity for churches that are established that want to help a church start. A mission team can
yes.
come in, and you set them up, and you give them assignments, and it's servant evangelism. And now the challenge is you don't want a mission team that thinks their mission is to come down and door-to-door evangelize the entire community. You want servant evangelists, right?
Yeah, that was the thing we dealt with a little bit when I had mission teams come in. I had to make it real clear. I didn't want them talking to people. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds difficult, But the style church we were starting was one that we would offer people the invitation to follow Christ, and they would come at their pace. We were not going to try to pigeonhole and close the deal. So I didn't want anybody trying to pigeonhole and word getting out. Yeah, you got one of those cards, but I met one of those guys on the street. They didn't let me go till I prayed some prayer with them. I just did that to get rid of them. Yeah. So it's people feel guilty sometimes, like I can't talk for Christ. Listen, servant evangelism is perfect. You're just doing random acts of kindness and getting giving the church and Christ the credit.
And your actions speak so much louder than your words.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And that's and there are a lot of different opportunities that you could have. I mean,
and we turn everything into a marketing piece again. We put pens out, and it has our church's name on it. And I encourage people to steal them. Yeah, the website. I say, take these with you, and when you go to lunch, and you sign it, and you leave your pen there. And so there's pens everywhere. There's cards everywhere. I'm just trashing the area with our website. Actually, it's not trash, but if it's got a perceived value, they'll hold on to it.
Well, those pens are a stealth marketing campaign. I mean, we've seen that here at the Springs. Everybody's got one. Cole's got one in his hand for the Connection Church. They're great. I mean, here at the Springs, we've been using them for 11 years. I want to tell you, every single store in town has one of those. Everywhere I go to sign a check, somebody hands me a Springs pen.
Yeah.
And when you look at these, we have to change our mindset about marketing and see it not as an expense, but as an investment. We're investing in getting the word out and in evangelism. And the bottom line is, the best advertising, the best buzz that you can get going is word of mouth, and that's free. So we want to resource people, put things in the hands of the people around us, whether it be through the invite cards or through pens or whatever, that they're talking about it, because it's people who reach people, and these are just resources that we're putting in their hands to reinforce it.
Yeah, long term, the biggest number of people who come is going to come over a relationship. As we start, one of the things I think, Cole, you may have found this the case, our mailers don't bring as many people as our people do, but what it does do is gives credibility. When people say, hey, come to church at the Bay, we meet over at the school, somebody goes, yeah, I got a card from them, as opposed to come go to next level, we meet over to theater, and what kind of church is that? They don't know anything about them. So it just kind of softens the ground a little bit, kind of prepares it to be cultivated.
Yeah, I think the whole direct mail, let's dialogue a little bit on that if we could, because I'm hearing a lot of people say, direct mail doesn't work anymore. And well, that might be true in direct mail saturated communities.
Yeah, you have to look and see if there's probably one church in an area that really has the corner on the market on direct mail. And if somebody else is already doing it, that might not be the route that you want to put a lot of money into. I'd still say do it some. But what happens with direct mail is one piece may not pull somebody in, but when you send five or six over a long period of time, then you'll find that they have staying power. They keep working
right
over the long haul.
Yeah, we did a mailer for each of our previews, and then before our launch, 3 weeks before, 2 weeks before, and 1 week before each, we did a mailer that slam, 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 because just to create that. The other thing I found, Ron, is mailers have to have a hook. I mean, when I see a mailer, I go, so what? What is it about this that makes me want to look at it? The old mailers that, we're here, come and join us, or come grow with us, that doesn't mean anything. Or just your logo out there and your name, who cares? You know, you've got to have a hook in there. And the thing I've found is when you decide your target, then you can make your hook very attractive when you're doing your mailers.
Yeah, don't make these cards. I've seen these cards that look very, very much like a church. And people aren't interested in that. They'll throw those away. You've got to survive the 2 second sort, and it's got to be something interesting enough that people will hold on to and look at.
Right. And I think that the stat I hear thrown around is you can expect a half of 1% return, the people that will show up because of a mailer, and that's going to vary. I mean, sometimes that just doesn't even hold true. But if you're in, I think a lot of that has to do with, number one, the quality of your mailer, because I've seen some mailers that I wouldn't show up either.
And the quantity as well. I mean, you send out 1,000. Don't expect much off of that. If you send out 20,000, you can expect a much larger return.
Right. And we're here at the Springs, we do 40,000 piece mailers, and they work. I mean, they still work for us. But we're probably one of the first churches that started using mailers, and so I think direct mail can still work in certain cities. But it really matters.
And one of the things that that knew I knew ours would work where we were. I was there by Easter last year, and I got nothing from any church in the area. And if anybody has direct mail, they do it on Easter. And I thought, yeah, I will be different. Not that I'm in competition, but nobody was in that market. So I knew I could had a chance. We had a chance at creating a buzz.
Yeah. And Easter is a time, like you say, that, that churches do send out these pieces. And so that's a time I wouldn't be left out of the whole mix, but I wouldn't just count on my Easter mailer being the one that people notice. You need to do it at some other strategic times as well.
Okay, so that, those are some of the ways that we create the buzz. We try and capture the attention of a community. We talk about it, you know, before that preview service, there's an expense. There's a stress expense getting ready for it. There's financial expense and all the marketing pieces of it. There's people expense and servant evangelism and working the community there and getting the name out. Okay, you have your first preview service and going back to working the W. Let's drop down the bottom. The first left bottom of the W is you just go ahead and write down launch team activity on that. Because a launch team activity, you want to turn around and a week later have an activity, whether it's a debrief, and you guys have done this, so talk with me through the whole launch team activity.
Yeah, we did several things with launch team activities. We would do some planning for the comeback event. We'd do some trips to other churches to see what we liked, what we thought was working, what we ought to do differently. But basically that comeback event for the launch team was getting prepared for launching. Who do you know? Who can you bring? Who are we going to contact for the comeback event? What are we going to do there? And stuff like that. So it was kind of a preparation thing for the comeback for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did something like that where we got everybody together, and we just talked about believing God for something big. And really got that out. And it was great for the people that had been coming to get together and just celebrate what had happened at the first preview. And so it can be a time of celebration as well.
Yeah, and with that launch team, too, I think you always want to be stoking them and saying, right, listen to me, you got to get ready for the next one. You got to get ready. We'll celebrate what God did. But listen, next one, and I heard someone talk about doing this, have your people write down 10 names.
We did that. We did that. And what you do is that your first preview, those are the people that you can use for your second preview. And we got everybody together. We got them a card at the service and just challenged them to write down 10 names of people that they're going to be bringing back with them the next time. So those are your inviters at that point. Before you have first preview, you don't have anybody you can do that with. But when you do the first preview, then all of a sudden you've got a whole team of people that are inviters, that if they had a great experience, they're going to pass the word along.
Yeah, what we did, we had postcards printed up. We actually put stamps on them and gave out 5 postcards to everybody who visited and said, hey, invite a friend. And
that's so good. Well, and then you're also, at the end of a preview service, you're giving those out. You're telling them to write down the names of 10 friends. And then you're also inviting them to a comeback event.
Right.
Now, that's the middle of the W is just go ahead and write that comeback event. And let's kind of break that one down a little bit, Cole, because you learned a lot in the first.
Yeah, I think at this point when we did this, this was still certainly in the experimental phase, and I think it still is as we're trying to figure out this the way the W works. But our first comeback event was a big servant evangelism type event where we wanted to give away school supplies. And as it turned out, it just didn't really work for us. We had a few people show up. And what I found through that was that it's best on these comeback events not to make them perhaps into a big community event.
Right.
But to make it a way for people to come back that you've met at the service and they can get to know you and the team a little better.
Let's just be totally honest. How many people showed up?
We probably had 50 people show up.
Okay.
But, you know, it was over time. It started building momentum. Mm-hmm. But what happened was there was one person that was really key who brought a neighbor. And they were there for a while with almost no one there. And I was a little embarrassed by that. We had people. I've still got pictures of the people that were there. We sent them out to the street, out to the road. And they were just waving people in. And so it was a... It was not a morale-building evening.
Well, and I think that the word that throws it off, we call it a comeback event, but it's really not an event. It's more of a relational building, and I think, Hal, you might have hit
something. I remember riding in the car with you and Nelson and saying, man, I got to do this event. How do I do that? And you guys said, whoa, Event doesn't mean something. What you want is a connection time, something easy, do something where the kids can play around a little bit, and you can drink Cokes and eat popcorn and talk. So what we actually did was got a bounce house for the comeback, and that kept the kids busy. And we had snow cones and stuff, but we could sit around and connect with people. Because our whole role and goal in the comeback was to enlist those people to serve in the next preview.
And one of the things that I found that worked, and this is going to, depending on the opportunities you have in your area, there's actually a coffee house that has sort of a small concert venue out back that's open air. And so we would get people to come to that as a comeback event and a relational event. And that was a lot more effective than when we try to do the big party.
Yeah, my first comeback, we had 30 people show up from our first preview service. And I wasn't happy with that, and I figured the next one would be better. Well, the next one we had 12 show up. And what I realized was when you're starting like this, they don't know you real well yet. And when we did a thing, we did our last comeback event at our house, and we had over 50 people come that joined our launch team at that point. And that was incredible. You just got to keep playing with it and find out what works. I mean, if it works in your community, go and run with it. If it doesn't, don't be afraid to change it, because I was failing miserably. By the end of our second preview, we had 35 people on the launch team, and we had to have 75 to 100 to launch the way we were. The Springs would not continue to staff our church. So I said, we better figure something out.
All right. And the comeback events, I mean, you said something that's key. We're still trying to figure a lot of this out. We're still in experimental phases with a lot of this. And so, but after that comeback event, the next week, you have another launch team activity. And that's just keeping that launch team engaged through the entire process. You have your launch team. So basically, you have the first preview service in week one. Week two, you have a launch team activity. Week three, you have a comeback event. Week four, you have another launch team activity. And the launch team is a part of the comeback event, and they're meeting people. And then week five, you're ready for preview number two.
Right.
So what you're doing here is enlisting people and building momentum to move toward preview number two, which is at the top right of the W. So that W actually represents a 5-week span of time. And then that next preview service, hopefully you have more people serving, more people that are part and starting to take ownership in the vision, and you take off with preview number two. And during the same time period, you've got marketing happening in the community. You're driving them through invite cards, servant evangelism, and mailers, and you're just continuing to capture the attention of a community.
One of the temptations we faced was we wanted to launch early. We'd started with the previews, and by the second we said, we got this down. People are looking at us, like Cole said, say, let's go. And I'm thinking, let's go. I talked to Ron. I talked to some other guys. I said, back away. You're not ready. Don't launch too soon. And here's what I learned now, looking back, understand a little bit better. The preview is not only a chance for you to get the service right as you're going there and getting your systems together and giving you some time to plan in between. It's a huge psychological principle involved there when people have to focus on coming on a certain weekend. If you're meeting every weekend, they're going, well, if I can't make it this weekend, I'll make it next. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not that, then the next. Oh, no, this is the one time they're meeting. They're not meeting for another month. We got to be there, hon. Let's not be out of town. Let's not do that. And it causes some focus, and that helps build energy toward the launch. I didn't realize that in the middle of it. I'd have been less likely to try to keep pulling the trigger too quick.
Well, because once you start, you're in this every week. You know, the preview service gives you 3 weeks to work, you know, building relationships and, you know, contacting, having breakfast and lunches and working with your launch team. And then, you know, once you start, what you're doing is you're maximizing attendance.
Right.
So that they're all coming that one time and you've got a crowd. And otherwise, you're going to, you know, kind of disperse the crowd and, you know, lose some momentum. So you've got that second preview service. And then from the second preview, we just keep
working the W.
And getting ready for the third. And the goal is to have increasing attendance at each preview, building up to a massive launch. That's the goal. And you know, the reality is some of the previews are less attended than others. I don't know. What have you found out there?
Yeah, okay. our second preview actually went down. Like I said, we had the 145, and I thought, well, I was shooting too low. We're going to have 200, and then we'll have 300 at launch. And it didn't really work like that for us. But some of that for us was also sort of the finances and the financial picture we were dealing with. We didn't do another mailer for the second one. So if you can do that, I think go for it.
We dipped our second one. The hurricane the day before didn't hurt us.
Oh, yeah.
Or didn't help us. But the other thing for us was this, that I learned. After they knew us a little bit, having been to some previews, the last preview, we were between a rock and a hard place because we were launching in 4 weeks, and we were not ready to launch. And I got up at the end, and I asked people if they'd done this. They hadn't, but I was desperate. At the end of that service, I said, hey, listen, you all know we start Church of the Bay September the 11th, and we're going full-time. We need you to help us launch. Would you like to be a part of something brand new? I've got a 10-minute meeting after this service over in a side room, and if you'd like to be in there to check out some questions, hey, come on, and we'll do it. And I was scared to death. We said amen, and we left, and I walked over there, and I remember because I walked up the room, I said, is anybody in there? And I looked in. There were 50 people in there. I was going, oh, yes. And I got in there, and basically what my plan was there was to sign them up for dinners at my house. And we had them over to our house in groups of 12 to 15 over the next week and strategically put staff members at tables. And then here's what we did, Ron. We took a 30-minute vision cast. I cast vision where we're going, and I gave out a job description list. And I said, pick your top three, and here's what I need you to do is trust us. Trust us. If you're top, and if everybody signs up to be a host here, we need other people than that. Well, you may get number two. You may get number three. But take this challenge for 3 months, and then we definitely want to keep moving you around until you find the place that fits for you. We had all but one person that came to that sign up to help us launch the next couple of months, and it was absolutely incredible. It was a go God moment. We were all getting high fives and thanking God because, frankly, I was scared to death there that we weren't going to have the people ready to launch this thing.
Well, and what you did, too, is, we've all heard it said that when people come to a church, they're looking for two things. They're looking for relationships, and they're looking for responsibilities. And you gave them both. You invited them to your house for dinner in groups of 12, and they started building relationships with you and with others, and then, boom, you gave them responsibility. What you just did is increase the ownership value of your
right.
the Bay. You put it through the roof. And I think that the challenge for a lot of guys is that they want to have the preview services, but they miss that. They miss, you've got to constantly be giving guys hooks and opportunities and, to step in and sign up and take ownership, and that can be tiring, but you're in that recruitment mode.
And then the first month, at the end of the first month, we did another dinners at my house. We enlisted another 14 to 20 people. But after that, they knew us well enough where we didn't have to have every dinner at our house. Then my wife was glad for that. But we were able then, they'd seen us operate, we'd been around for 8 weeks, we could actually enlist them to come to a side room where we cast vision and enlisted them. And now I'm going to tell you what's unbelievable to me. We're in two services, which helps the staffing, but we had 94 children in our children's ministry this weekend, and we had 44 workers.
Wow.
And that doesn't happen without a huge ownership piece and casting vision toward owning. And, of course, our guys, they just enlist everything. If you can breathe and walk, you get enlisted. So that's a cool deal.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the time frame on all this, because what you guys just downloaded is a lot of work, and I've heard some guys that come on the field and they say, I was on the field for a year just getting the lay of the land, just learning
the demographics.
It's too long.
Yeah.
It's like, what we tell people is you don't need to be there longer than 6 months. You can launch a church in 6 months.
Yep.
I actually was at the Purpose Driven Conference in May of 2004, and I got a chance to run into Rick Warren, and we asked him, we said, okay, now how soon should we launch? And he said, go home right now and launch. Well, I thought, this is a little soon. Who ever heard of launching in June, right in the summer? And probably that wouldn't have been the best thing. But I think the principle and the heart behind it is launch as soon as humanly possible or as godly possible. But there are some key strategic times of the year that people have found that work pretty well. Probably the number one that most people start with is, and they say, is Easter. And that's been the long, you know, long-standing time. And yet, I'm not so sure that that's the best time.
That shifted this last
year.
Yeah,
I think so.
I talked to a church planting guy who was helping people plant, and he said, you know, the number one time I've seen this year is September.
That's when we launched.
The time you launched. And me too. And the cool thing is you've got some time to get it together before you get to the next summer.
Oh, I don't regret it at all. In fact, I don't think we'd be anywhere near as far along as we are today if we had launched an Easter. Because what happens is you gather this big crowd at Easter, but when you're launching large, you've got to assimilate on the run. You've got to be assimilating as you go. And so if you launch, especially if it's, you know, Easter, nobody ever really knows when that is. It's either in March or in April, depending on the vernal equinox or something like this.
Wow.
So if it's, yeah. If
that's
it's in
big words there.
And I
had a friend of mine that had that once. It was right me.
If it's in April, that may not even be the right correct terminology, but if it's in April, then you've only got about a month to get people into the church and get them assimilated, and you're gonna have a hard summer following that.
Right.
But if you move it back to September, then you've got all the fall, and you've got several relaunch moments between September and that first summer to continue to build your crowd.
Yeah, you know, I think we could all build a case for September being a better launch period. But I'm thinking about people listening to this CD, and if they're set for Easter, this is what I would tell you. Don't change your launch date.
No, that's okay. What I was going to say.
No, there are several times throughout the year that are good, that are fine times.
But what you said, don't change. Had I not locked in a launch date, mm-hmm. when I got to that last preview, I'd have said, we're not ready yet. And I wouldn't have thrown it all out there on the carpet in front of everybody at the end and gone after those 50 people. I'd have still tried the same way we're doing it. And having a launch date helps you get ready and will force you to do some things. And for us, it was 6 months after, 7 months after we landed that we launched. Mm-hmm. And I just found guys want to put that off. Well, I'm not quite ready. How many people? I would say you set the date and you work backwards.
Good.
Yeah, and if you're looking at a September date, then you know the first weekend is always Labor Day in September. So don't hit a holiday. That might be your last preview service if you want to do it that way, and your last time to do that before the launch. But then also another time that people have found is in January.
Yeah.
And if you do January, I wouldn't do the first week in January mm-hmm. because that's still too much of the holidays. I wouldn't do it on Super Bowl Sunday. Some people say Super Bowl Sunday is a good time, but we found that's one of the biggest holidays of the year. And so, but sometime early in January, maybe mid-January, is a good time that I think some people have found has worked.
Yeah, and I think the thing we need to just remember and drill down on is set the date and work backwards.
Right.
Set the date. Don't change it. You will always come to that date and go, oh, we're not ready. Even for the first preview service, you go, we don't have anything together. Don't just go. Just go. Let it rip. And because if you push the date off once, you will be more prone to put it off. I know a guy right now who has put the date off for 2 years, and he still, you know, hasn't launched because he's not ready. Sorry, that's a leadership issue.
I don't know that you ever feel ready. It's kind of like being married, I suppose. You know, you don't ever feel ready, but you've got to step out there in faith, and God will honor your commitment and your step of faith. Right. There's got to be some faith and some risk involved.
And the other thing that's interesting about the whole launching large and the purpose-driven model is there's a study out that Ed Stetzer did looking at all the models that are out there for church planting, and he found that the purpose-driven model is the fastest-growing church plant model out there. And it's because of what we're talking about on this whole CD. It's because when you launch large, you continue growing. I heard Rick say that I've seen churches that once that launch and they go beyond 200 in that first year, they just keep on growing and growing. But the churches that never do within the first 12 to 18 months, if you don't break 200 within the first 12 to 18 months, you usually never will. And you just kind of plateau.
Well, there's several growth barriers that you find under 100, and you know most churches in America are under 100 people a week, and so if you launch large, you're already far beyond the size of the average churches in America. And so you've got a growth barrier at about 30 to 50. You've got one at 75. You've got one at 125.
You know what? So I don't think so. I mean, you know what I think? I think you got bad leadership.
It's a leadership issue.
Right. Disagreement on the table. Yeah,
no, but that's
it's a leadership issue.
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
It's bad leadership. It's because that's what we're talking about. The best way to break growth barriers is never had to deal with them. Just boom, right out of the chute, come out with 200, 300 strong, and you can keep on growing.
And when you're that size, immediately some things are already set about your church, and that is you're not the everybody's buddy, everybody's best friend. When you have 150 people in your church, they already understand that you're not going to be at their beck and call. There's certain things you can't do at that size, and that really sets up your church for some future growth and frees you up.
Let me say one other thing. We did our first year commitment in Launching Large is every series to be a felt need type series, unbalanced, of course, and every one of them we market and we promote. As we get into year two, I won't have the money to do as much of that and things like that. But our first year that's Launching Large, it's pushing, it's lighting another rocket, it's doing everything I can. I'm going for broke. If we don't achieve liftoff, we're in trouble. But that is that first year momentum builder that you just set who you are, and it's what you said, you blow by the barriers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and those barriers are real. I mean, they're there, and I wasn't saying that they don't exist. What I'm saying is that that's just poor leadership if they can't get beyond them.
When you establish what you're talking about, Hal, as your first year, that becomes who you are. If you sit around for the first year and you're just going to be a small church that you're meeting each other's needs and taking care of each other, that sets a pattern of who you are. When you spend the first year involved in intentional outreach and growth, that will set the DNA in place of your church for future years to come.
Yeah, and the other thing about the whole launching concept is I know that there are people listening to this CD who are sitting there with 75, 90, 100 people going, we've been here for five
years.
What do we do? You have a big launch team.
Make them the launch team. Set a launch date.
That's it. And go. And here's the thing. The Springs, we're 11 years old, 3,000 people. We relaunch the Springs several times a year. Still, we use these same principles. You'll never stop relaunching the church. It's all about, I think, Hal, I've heard you talk about the booster rockets.
Right.
To get into a different level in orbit, you're going to have to hit some booster rockets. And that's, in essence, what we continue to do every year, using these same principles. We're about ready to do that, opening up some more venues. We just opened a campus. It's all about launching.
See, the launch is about getting out of the gravitational pull of the dirt. Mm-hmm. And once you get out of that, it takes less to boost. But you've got to keep momentum going that way.
Yeah, that's good. So these are some of the concepts, some of the thoughts, some of the experience around this table about launching a church large. I realize this is a paradigm shift. I realize this is a lot of expense from financial to stress to people expense. But what I'll tell you is you will never regret putting out the effort to launch large. You'll watch a church grow faster, be healthier than you ever dreamed of. And I think you just have to weigh that one out right now. Is it worth it to go for it and launch large? We here at Purpose Driven would tell you absolutely, because we've watched hundreds of guys do it now. And it's fun to sit and listen to the stories of guys that have continued to reach their community for Christ. For more information on other resources that we have available, go to our website, www.pdplanting.com. Thank you.